Hi, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Toy Harp, a podcast about bluegrass. This is the last episode of season two. Here from Nashville is my conversation with Allison Krauss.
I remember, you know, the first time I looked out in the audience and saw people singing words to our songs that only we had recorded. That was just a really crazy moment. Just never thought it'd end up being there. Never thought we'd hear back from Rounder. Yeah. Never thought we would hear from Rounder in the first place.
If this is your first time listening, you can hear full interviews with Jerry Douglas, Allison Brown, Bela Fleck, Larry Sparks, Jody Stecker, and so many more wherever you get your podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Later on.
Hi, and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. It's me, Cindy Howes. Thank you for joining us today. Very excited about the latest edition of our occasional series, Folk Debate Club. We are live at sea on the Kiamo Cruise, which, if you are not familiar, is a cruise featuring singer-songwriters and roots musicians that has been at sea since 2008. Before we get into that, let's talk about you signing up for our newsletter. That's really all I want in life, is for you to go to the show notes and click on the link to sign up for our newsletter. It's once a month, and it lets you know what's going on with the podcast, who's been on, who's coming on, how we feel about who's been on and who's coming on. You can also sign up at our website, basicfolk.com. Thank you very much. See you in your inbox. You can also follow us on social media. Basic Folk is active on Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram. If you want to see pictures of my dog and cat and wife, you can follow us on Instagram. But we are at Basic Folk Pod on all three of those platforms. You can also become a contributor to Basic Folk and help financially support this podcast. We are a small, little, teeny, tiny operation, so every little bit helps. You can go to the show notes and find a link to donate, or you can check it out at basicfolk.com. There's a link to donate and a link to the store. You can get yourself a hand-knit Basic Folk beanie that's made by my mom with LOL, lots of love. Okay, we are live at sea. Lizzie, Noah, and I recorded this episode on board Kiamo, which is a singer-songwriter cruise that's been sailing yearly since 2008 and is one of the best music festivals we've attended, hands down. Today, it's another edition of Folk Debate Club. This time, it's about community versus capitalism, and we talk about both through the lens of folk music and the music industry at large. Don't worry. We get it all figured out in this episode of Folk Debate Club at Sea. Hope you enjoy. Here's Community versus Capitalism on Basic Folk. Hi, everybody. Good morning. Thanks for coming to Coffee and Conversations. You have no idea what you're in for, and that is fun. My name is Cindy Howes, and I host a podcast on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network called Basic Folk, along with Lizzie Noe, who is right here, and playing in this very spot, 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock tonight,
this evening.
Right here.
Don't miss it. So we, on Basic Folk, have honest conversations with folk musicians, and occasionally we have a series called Folk Debate Club, and we are happy to present Folk Debate Club at Sea. I would like to introduce our panel this morning. We have Jenny Owen Youngs, singer-songwriter and podcast host of Buffering the Vampire Slayer, The X-Files, and Veronica Mars Investigations. We have Natalie Dean from Sixth Man, director of Sixth Man Event Team, among other cruises. We are here at Kiamo, which is an actual community at sea that has prospered and flourished for 16 years. And we have Amy Reitnauer Jacobs, executive director and co-founder of the Bluegrass Situation, an organization that began rooted in bluegrass community and has since expanded to many more genres, including country music with the newsletter Good Country. And you know me, I'm a radio professional with an undying love for folk music for the past 25 years. Even though I am only 22 years old.
And of course, Lizzie Ngo, known communist and singer-songwriter on the rise and co-host of Basic Folk. Okay, so here's what we're talking about today. Building community in folk music in authentic and unique ways will help drive your passion. But how do you stay true to your values while being able to pay for your life? How do you build trust among your audience in a way that allows them to build trust with each other? And how have musical community leaders cultivated their particular communities? Guys, capitalism is our current reality, but it historically has not mixed well with folk music or with community. You know, so we got to pick one or the other, right? Or do we? Is there a way that these two can live side by side in folk music? This is what we are discussing. Folk Debate Club at Sea, presented by The Bluegrass Situation and Basic Folk. Okay, so let's get into it. I have definition of community and definition of commodity, but should we read that? Okay. Here's our definition of community: the feeling of fellowship with others as a result of sharing common attitude, interests, and goals. We all feel like we're in that right now at Sea? Great. Definition of commodity is a useful or valuable thing, such as water or time. So we'll use words like commodity. We'll also use words like capitalism and consumerism. And if you're here right now, or if you're listening to this podcast, we are recording it for the Basic Folk feed. I can make this assumption: you want to support music financially, and you want to support it with your heart. Music is something that sustains our lives, and it's also a profession and something that people consume. Okay, thank you for dealing with that very long intro. So let's get into some questions here, guys, all right? Okay, let's talk about the origin of community. So a lot of times, organic community is like the hero's journey, or like lightning in a bottle. You know, community was not something that you might actively think about or create. You build a place that you would want to come to, and you start your good work, and community forms around you. So for the panel, what has it been like when you realize that community is building around your work?
I'll jump right in. Okay. So the interesting thing with the Bluegrass Situation, BGS, and some of you may be familiar with us, we've been on board now, this is our third year on KAMO, but it was actually kind of the opposite, in that work formed around the community that I was actively building. And so I started BGS over 12 years ago in Los Angeles out of a deep need for community, where I was feeling a little untethered and was having a hard time finding friends and really my people out in LA recently after moving out there. And I was working in the film industry, but ended up finding those folks at shows and at these folk and Americana shows that were taking place around West LA at the time. And it was kind of this, you know, micro revival. And I started attending and writing about it because I was craving community. And out of that, BGS was born and then became work in the best way possible. But it was, you know, I think it's interesting how one can beget the other, but in different order.
Jenny, do you have anything? Because I feel like you have this like incredible community around buffering that seemingly was like a huge surprise.
Yes. First, can I just say ahoy?
Ahoy.
Second, can I just say I love that you said beget. My favorite part of the Bible is when everyone is begatting for like a whole chapter. It's pretty cool. Yeah, I would say that what happened around buffering was like very weird and definitely a surprise. I had been making records and touring for like 10 plus years when we started the podcast, and it just became this whole, I thought it was going to be like another branch of my life, but it's just like another tree, you know? And it's been like really incredible to interface with people over, you know, essentially they come to the podcast because they love the same story that we love, but like, I think that like the thing that makes Buffy really special and like why people still really care about it 25 plus years later is that Buffy makes people want to be better people and makes, like, helps them believe that they can be. And I think, like, the people who still really attach and, like, find a lot of meaning in that show, you know, are living that in their lives. And, like, that makes them want to do good, which is very cool because one of the things that they think is good is also then listening to my music as, like, a side product of finding the podcast. But what's really, really incredible is, like, they're, like, sort of this self-starting force where, like, we're just kind of, like, this beacon, this little hub that they all gather around, but then they find each other. And we have this, like, vast Facebook group where they've all created, like, subgroups, the most special of which is the Scooby support group, where, like, anybody can go to vent, and everyone will, if somebody's having a bad day, if they lost their job, they had to put their cat to sleep, like, they've ended a relationship, everyone in the group will privately just, like, Venmo the person who is geographically closest to that individual, $1, $5, whatever, that person will create a care package and then just, like, drive it to this person's porch and, like...
Amazing.
Like, that's the kind of... Am I answering your question
at all? Yeah, well, it also leads to another question of, like, that sounds like the people in your community trust each other and they trust you. And I think that's a huge part of the community. And how do you build that integrity and how do you build that trust in the curation of your community?
Yeah, I can go. So Six Man wouldn't exist without community. Our company was founded by our founder, Andy Levine, because Sister Hazel's street team wanted a place to come together, and a lot of them had never met in person. And so that's how Six Man was created, was because we wanted to bring a group of people together who loved this one band and wanted to see them to succeed. And so from the very beginning, we had to trust in each other to make something, to grow something with one another. And I think a lot of that comes from just listening to each other, listening to everybody around you, you know, and really building off of that. And I think that's something that I love so much about Six Man and why we've been able to create communities that are longstanding is because we listen to each other. We listen to what the artists are telling us, to what the guests are telling us, and, you know, we try to bring all of that together. And I think that's a huge part of trust and why the community continues to grow and you see new people coming into it.
Great. Yeah, I love that. Listening is very important. And also, I feel like the word of the day is baguette. Let's keep using it. Okay. So let's talk about supporting a community. Like, it takes a really dedicated, passionate person. It takes passionate people who do it because they love it, like almost to a point where they are burnt out. So supporting the people that support the community means more than one thing. So for the panel, what does support and affirmation look like, and how have you avoided burnout in the community? Like, what is the work-life balance for y'all?
Okay. Speaking as an independent folk artist and podcaster, I feel like this is something that's coming up constantly between artists backstage. Everyone's sort of like looking at each other, whispering like, how are you paying your bills? Or like, how are you continuing to make records and like maybe also having a family or a life of some kind? And like the big elephant in the room is that like capitalism is sort of like crushing us all like down, down, down. So the support really starts with transparency. Like, it starts with looking somebody in the eyes and like being very real about what you're going through and then being willing to act on it arm in arm together. And that can be really messy. Like, sometimes it means just like promoting a friend's GoFundMe. Sometimes it means like doing shows for like a little bit less than your quote might be because it's going to be something that's going to benefit your community. Sometimes it means like speaking truth to power in a way that feels actually really shitty and like might have bad consequences for you as an individual because you believe in the longevity of the community. Like, as artists, we have to like be sometimes the nail that sticks out to like get our needs addressed. Like, when it comes to like a great example of this right now is like how a lot of artists are speaking out about how streaming royalties are so low that our careers are just financially unsustainable. Like, one person speaking out about that is a complaint, but like hundreds of people speaking out about that is a movement. And so agreeing to like kind of put your neck out for other artists because you all share the same goals and interests, like that's what showing up for the community looks like.
How is everybody at asking for help?
The worst.
I've gotten better, but it takes pushing yourself to sometimes an unhealthy limit to realize that you need it. And when you are so focused on building out your own career, building out a community, building out a website or a company, sometimes it feels easier to just do it all by yourself, and you can't do that. You can't do anything alone. None of us are meant to do this life alone. And I think that applies to the work and creative projects that we have and making something that's sustainable and lasting. I've, you know, really grew BGS for the first 5 years with pretty much me and one other person and pushed myself to the point of burnout and then had a health issue come up that kind of realigned everything and kind of woke me up to the fact that, like, you know, your job generally is not going to be there for you when you wake up from surgery or, you know, when you have a big life moment. And so reprioritizing after that, and then also reprioritizing our team and our, you know, how we spent our budget and how our team worked, making sure that they weren't also going to go through. I mean, we all do a lot of work. Shout out to Shelby Williamson, who's in the audience right now, who does all the work with BGS and just keeps us ticking. But like, we also have a phrase that I like to say, that there's no such thing as a bluegrass emergency. Like, if something didn't get done, it's okay. We'll figure it out.
Amy, if you're willing, I would love to hear a little more about what it looks like to reshuffle a budget with community in mind. Are we talking about benefits? What are we talking about when you talk about the budget?
So I think a big thing is the challenge has always been really trying to find the best people and bring in the best people and the people that we really need to build a team when you don't always have additional resources, and making sure that hopefully people are getting fair pay, even though maybe it's not as much as I would love to give them, but it's what we can do, and hopefully incentivizing through other things, and not like free pizza, like incentivizing with real things.
No, exactly.
You know, but we do love pizza too. So, I don't know. I think it's just about trying to, you kind of make the best of it. I think we're probably going to get into more of this later, so I don't want to say too much yet.
No, I just think it's really interesting that, like, to keep a community thriving, like Bluegrass situation, like, where you have to invest, number one is labor. Like, I am sitting on the left, and I'm going to keep hammering away at my communist propaganda, but, like, it's, the Bluegrass situation is a great example of an organization that, like, is able to be sustainable because it's about keeping people well. And not just about like tackling an emergency one after another.
Yeah, but we also have to still, you know, sell ads and sponsorships and that kind of thing too to make that work.
All right, let's get spicy, everybody. Let's talk about problematic people. Okay, so you need community leaders that can generate excitement and maintain it. And a lot of times people have their own agendas and it turns people off. And it can be harmful when artists that we love and care about have to go through these shitty people and do the gig just because it's a paycheck or because it's wide exposure, you know? So you have to make your own judgments when you cross that line, when you address a problematic leader. So what do you all do? Like, do you just distance yourself from them or do you confront them? And how would you confront?
Okay, so I think this is going to be interesting for me to answer. I think that I lean in, right? Because I go back to how you create trust is listening. And so really at the end of the day, if somebody is being negative or being disrespectful, there's obviously something else going on. And something that I love about Six Man is we're real humans, right? So we want to connect on a human level with people. So we have a Facebook group, and I'm sure many people in the audience are part of the Facebook group. And sometimes it can get really negative, and it can pull each other down. And I think something that we try to lean into, again, is calling and talking to that person. You know, what is really going on? What can we do to make it better for everyone? Same when we're sailing on a ship, you know, like, you never know what someone is going through and what they might be struggling with and how they might choose to express it. But we want to know if someone's not having a great time and what can we do to pivot and fix that or innovate or find the middle ground and all of that, right? And that is something that I love a lot about our company, is that we don't shy away from it. You know, we do try to really, again, go back to the listening aspect of it and try to understand what we can do to bring the community back together. You know, like, you want that harmony, and sometimes they're just not connected. And then at the end of the day, too, sometimes this isn't the community for them anymore, and they grow out of it, and they might come back to it, and you have to learn that, if that makes sense.
I think in the broader industry, music industry, we see a lot of problematic people, a lot of problematic leaders. And I think as a media organization, and we kind of straddle this really interesting space between being a media organization, but also being curators and producers of events and stages and stuff like we do here on Kayamo. And I think that typically we have two choices. We can either shine a light, like use our platform to shine a light on the problems that this person is causing, or by not engaging with them, by choosing to not highlight their event or to not participate and actively avoid, not even like be avoidant of the situation, but by not endorsing them or what they do, that's also a statement. But the thing that always really gets me is artists don't have that luxury for the most part. I think, like you were saying, one person saying something is a complaint. A lot of people saying something is a movement. But we have to remember that a lot of times those problematic people are leading major, major things that can completely sway an artist's career, that could kill parts of an artist's career. And that there's a lot of folks that financially don't have the luxury of like taking that stand. And so that's where I feel like it's also part of our job to stand up and speak up, and whether that's publicly or privately, to try to help and truly be supportive of our artist community when we can and when we have that power.
This is something, you know, for those of you who are listening, if you can identify within your own musical communities problematic leaders, we're saying one great way to help is to pull that person aside and have a conversation with them. You know, because I echo what Amy says, is that artists don't have the luxury of just walking away from something that pays really well because they need to pay their bills, or something that gives them huge exposure, which then leads to like being able to pay bills. Yeah, I was thinking a lot about, you know, other than attending shows, buying the merch, signing up for the newsletter, you know, that's a way that we can help support our own particular local music communities. Do you guys want to get spicy or should we move on?
No, I really appreciate what you all had to say as folks that are like kind of on the other side of the mic when it comes to being in production and in journalism. Like, I've had so many experiences where I've had to kind of like tap dance for someone who didn't care if I lived or died, just to like get a little foot in the door in music. And you don't take that stuff personally at all. It's the game that you have to play. But again, like as an artist that's trying to get to the next level, you're not really in a position to be calling somebody out for problematic behavior. And it's because of the imbalance of power. So like, I can't, you know, talk, like when I was shopping my record around, I had record, you know, executives asking me, how old are you? And what's your relationship status? Like, these are questions that would be illegal in any job interview. But in the music industry, you just put up with it because you would like to get some money for your record. So in those moments, I as an individual can't do anything but take care of myself and do my best to keep myself safe in those situations. What I can do in the long term is to organize with other artists, like-minded music fans, like-minded folks in the industry, to create people power so that record labels don't have that power that they can treat us like whatever. Like, in the long term, we really can shift the balance of power to where fans and artists and people who really care about the music can be the ones dictating the narrative. Like, we're seeing that happen right now in country music with Beyonce, right? Like, what it took was someone powerful enough to say, I don't care if country radio doesn't want to play black people. I've put out a country song and all of my fans want to hear it. Tell me, like, try and stop me. That's the type of stuff we need to be getting into as artists, where it's like, we're no longer asking for permission from problematic people. Like, I can live with someone being shitty and, you know, disrespectful if I don't need to kiss their ass. Like, you're over there being disrespectful, but I'm doing my own thing over here with my people that support me.
I feel like nobody has said the most obvious thing, which is challenge them in single combat.
So true. Right.
Or double combat.
Yeah. Are you handy with a sword?
I am willing to learn. And what better place? What better environment to
Jenny
learn?
And I will see any of you on the basketball courts.
Yes, try
later
us.
Tonight if you have any issues.
That's right.
With what we've said here today.
R.
I'm so glad this is being recorded for posterity.
This seems like a good time to talk about failure, which is a big part of the process.
Are you saying that we would fail at double combat?
I can't believe you don't have faith in our abilities to physically dominate our foes.
Organizations that have like the flexibility to try new things and see what sticks, that's very powerful. Like, you tried Kayamo, you tried BGS, you tried Buffering. It was a huge success. Another thing may have failed, but instead of trying to make that failing thing work, you move on, you remain nimble. So how does failure play into your community? And how do you know when something is failing in terms of community and capitalism?
None of us have ever failed at anything.
Oh, okay.
Sandy, you'll need a new panel.
Next question. Honestly, okay. No comments on failure?
I just think failure is a very big word. I think mistakes and trials are a better term.
Okay.
Let's
refocus there.
We're kind of notorious for just throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks. And I think the things that don't stick are often still like stuff that I'm proud that we tried or that I can't believe we got away with or something. Like, you know, it's more, and then the things that stick, that's what you follow. You know, I think it's a learning process more than anything.
Okay. I've failed a lot. I don't want to speak for any of you, but like, the first few years of touring, I played to rooms of no one so many times that I think it actually gave me a, like, not even a thick skin, but an ability to stay present in situations that are miserable, and to find joy and silliness in them. And I think a lot of artists have gone through those periods where you're like, I'm trying my best, I'm playing these songs I wrote, and why isn't anyone showing up, and why am I still working 4-day jobs? Those are moments that teach you, like, what you actually want. Like, by seeing everything that's going wrong, you're like, okay, this is something that, if I had all the power in the world, I would do X. And so it gives you a chance to identify what you actually really want, which is community, which is consistency, which is like a lessening of stress. Like that's what those years taught me as far as failure.
Yeah. We have a company saying fail forward. Yeah. That's just how we like to look at it. I mean, we make tons of mistakes constantly. And we want to fail forward. You know, we want to keep learning from that. I love what both of you said, because that, I mean, again, that's such a strong ethos of our company. So yeah, I mean, I try to repeat that to myself every day, fail forward. I'm constantly learning, we're constantly innovating.
Cool, thanks for digging in.
May I?
Yes.
Pick up a shovel. I also think that, like, think about what you were saying, Amy, that just because like one venture or focus point that you act on or build around doesn't have like the same level of engagement as like another thing that you do, or like just because the single that you put out this week didn't get on the Spotify playlist that you were hoping it would, or you
why
know,
did
like,
you gesture towards me when you said that?
Do you guys
my
have
music
records
is beloved
out?
By all.
I'm just sorry. You're just the closest musician to
cool,
me.
Cool.
I didn't have a mirror.
Do we need to separate you two?
No.
No, but I think you need to get well. The swords.
No, it's going really well.
Okay, we're back on track.
But I think that we all like have, as people who like create things, build things, make things that really require community support to exist and perpetuate, like it's really easy to place value on the thing that's performing the best in that realm, but you also have to like do the things that you care about and make the things that you care about, things that you're most passionate about. And if that's like a side avenue of like your main thing, even if it's not the thing that is necessarily paying the bills or like receiving the most engagement, it might be the thing that's like keeping your heart beating while you're maybe going through a dip of like an energy dip on your main thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like in other industries, there's this concept of professional development where you do things because it makes you better at your job. But in music, we have like, often we feel like we have such scarce resources that every single thing that we do needs to immediately turn around and pay the bills. But yeah, I could not agree more that there are like so many projects that I've worked on where it's like maybe they never came out, or maybe like they weren't the most successful or memorable, but it's like that taught me how to be a better creator, right? And that pays off in the long run.
The role of individualism in art and capitalism. So let's talk about that. Capitalism is based on the idea of the individual consumer, and a part of the music industry wants us to participate in that. You know, the massive single star, counting your streams, counting your followers. So what is the role of individualism in capitalism, the music industry, versus the role of the individual in folk music?
Wow, there's a lot in there.
Okay, what I love most about folk music is that it's not about me, and it's not about you individually. Like, it's a big tradition, it's a big family. Like that's intergenerational. Like, I love that folk audiences like hearing covers and standards. Like, the best moments in folk music are when everybody's singing along. And I think that that's the case when it comes to the business side of folk music as well. Like, sorry to put you on the spot. Adeem, the artist, is in the audience right now. But Adeem is really changing the game in terms of like fan engagement and how that can become your bread and butter. Like that can pay your bills. Like, Adeem did this fundraiser where they asked 15,000 people for $1 and funded an album that way. Which means like, not only is your album getting funded, but the people who feel most invested in your career are not like one or two rich executives or donors or patrons. It's 15,000 regular people who had a dollar to spare. So that means that your audience is regular people who feel like they have a say in, you know, what your career and your music is becoming. Like, people like that are like who are the lifeblood of folk music for me.
I think I want to shout out KMONs because I think that they do a really good job of this. This is a community that really supports house concerts.
Yes.
So for a lot of artists, and they come on this cruise, they meet all of these amazing guests who then host them, feed them, get them more known in their local community. And that is folk music. That is the folk community. And it's something I love so much about what we've created on this cruise. And again, I just think it's the best thing. I've watched really young artists come on Camo for their very first time. And then the next time they come back, they're even more well-known. And a lot of that is because these people right here have invited them into their homes and helped propel their career even further. And I, that to me, that is the basis of folk community.
All right. A community needs to be growing and ever shifting. So in order to remain vibrant and healthy, you have to bring in new people and new ideas. Stagnancy just doesn't work. For you all and what you've experienced in community, what is the balance between growing for money, etc., and not alienating your existing community? And when is it okay to alienate community members?
Okay, I'll take this. So BGS has grown into this really vibrant and incredible community, mostly online, and a lot of in-person events as well. And I think something that we've, I don't want to say struggled with even, but what's something that we've had to kind of grapple with over the years has been that balance between finding the money, finding the sponsorships and the ads, keeping this supported and running, and for our community members. The way that I have tried to balance it is when we do choose to work with partners or advertisers or sponsors, that it's carefully vetted. So there's a trust that that audience that we're already working with and we're already serving, they know that whatever we're going to put in front of them, like, yes, it's keeping us sustained because we can financially keep going, but it's going to also be something that we truly endorse or trust or believe in or want to work with. And so even though there is sponsored content or there is advertising that's going to show up on the website or in their feed, it's not going to just be crap. And so I think like that level of trust is something that we continue to try to cultivate. That's really hard because there's a lot of crap out there. And it's also sometimes like the really quality stuff doesn't always have the marketing budget. So there's a very delicate balance in that. But then the other part of that of, can you repeat the last part of your question again? It's just
when is
so
it okay
well worded.
To alienate?
When is it okay to alienate community members?
Okay, yeah. So I think one thing that's interesting is from the very beginning, you know, our name has been a misnomer. We've never just covered bluegrass. We've never just been about bluegrass. It's kind of where it started. It was the origins. But it's always been the broader folk and roots community. And that has continued to grow to include so many offshoots and subgenres and other sub-communities therein. And we've always gotten the, quote, that ain't bluegrass crowd, especially in the commoners. And I think that I've never wanted to alienate those folks, but I do think that they get weeded out when they realize that this might not be the site for them. If, you know, we're trying to be as inclusive and welcoming as possible to all fans, regardless of where they're coming in their experience or how they're discovering us or how they're discovering this music. We want it to be a space for everyone. But if it's just not your thing, that's okay too. And maybe you don't need to be in our comments. That's all.
I think the good and the bad thing about like working in culture is that you're not just providing a consumer good, you're establishing a relationship with a human person. And like, I like to think of my fans or anyone that's engaging with my music as like, this is a person who's a potential friend. And how would I treat a fellow human adult that I respect? Like, I might challenge that person and they might challenge me, but I'm always gonna be treating them with respect. So like when people show up in my comments like, oh, I like your music, but when you started talking politics, I really hated that. It's like, well, I'm a person just like you. So like, if you don't like some parts of me, that's cool. But like, can we still treat each other with respect? And if the answer is no, if you just like truly cannot handle hearing some folk songs and then hearing about how we need a ceasefire in Palestine, then you're probably not going to want to come back to a Lizzie No Show, and God bless.
Yeah, I think that like, I think that it's like really important to know your like personal limits and boundaries when it comes to letting someone go into the night, because you don't have what they need and they don't have what you need, or they can't respect your right to be a 360-degree person.
That's the best relationship advice I've ever gotten. Thank you, Jenny.
That will be free universal health care, including therapy.
Hell yeah.
I probably had more thoughts, but they're gone now.
That was powerful.
I want to say also, like, going back to what Lizzie was saying about Adeem and what they did in activating 15,000 people to give a dollar versus a huge donor. Like, I'm from the world of public radio where we rely on your gift of support, $5 a month, as a sustaining member.
Listening, and it's like, supporting members like you.
You know, people would, whenever we would change programming or shift programming, there would be a number of community members that would be upset about it and couldn't flow with us anymore. And they would send emails about how they were canceling their membership. And, you know, in my particular experience, if it were comments that were misogynist or racist, I would be like, fine, like, cancel your membership. We have 14,999 more people behind us, and you won't be missed. So
that's called a boundary.
Yes.
That's a healthy boundary.
Exactly.
Like, we can deal with healthy debate. What we can't deal with is like personal disrespect and racism and sexism. And I think it needs to be said so often in music. Because sometimes it's like, let's come together and have a conversation. And sometimes it's like, absolutely not. That's a boundary we're not going to cross.
Yeah. And I think it's, at least for me, it's been like a challenge and a process to try to not feel like somebody, say, like leaving a community or ending their subscription or whatever, getting to a place where I'm like, this is not personal,
yes.
You know, but to be able to differentiate between like what is just, so, you know, like what somebody has to do for their life. Ever since I had a child who is small and cute, and maybe around here somewhere, if you see a tiny blonde baby boy, that one's mine. I try to imagine when people are like really driving like shit, and endangering my life. I try to imagine that every person who cuts me off is racing to the hospital to deliver a baby. And I feel like if we can apply that to people who are not saying or doing harmful, terrible things in our general direction, like as people who foster communities, like that is perhaps a positive way to proceed. But when people are being harmful, then it's straight to the basketball courts, you know?
Straight to the courts.
So Six Man is a subsidiary of Norwegian Cruise Lines. That's a corporate company.
Yeah.
And so we talk about this a lot within our company. We actually have a council we created within our company called Be Loud, because there's lots of things that we decided as a company that don't fit our values, that we don't stand for. And I think that was a big turning point for our company to be able to say that and put that out there, being owned by such a corporate company. But being able to take that stance as our own smaller company, just to say, like, no, we are not going to work with racist people. We are not going to work with people who are not inclusive. And we're also not going to take that from our communities that we're creating either. And I've been really proud of being a part of that. And we take it really seriously through again, the artists that we work with, the brands that we work with, and the guest communities that we're creating and fostering. And we give that power to our staff as well to really speak up and be able to have a safe space to say, hey, I don't feel great about this. I don't feel great about what I am seeing in this community or what I'm seeing from, you know, this person that we're working with or whatever it is. And I think that that, again, is really powerful.
I think that's like the best possible example of having autonomy to stand up for your community, even within a corporate structure. And I think it's just something for all of us to keep in mind, because we live within this society and this system, is like the, you know, when I start getting overwhelmed with the state of the world or the state of the music industry, I just keep reminding myself of like, I am trying to make a difference with my team, with my artists, with my partners, and with my community. And if I can just focus on that and try to do that little bit of good and try to, you know, make a little bit of difference, even if it's not something that's measurable or tangible or trackable, then that is the good that I can do in the world. I can't change these huge things, but we can make these little differences day to day that might go unseen, but that we know are like what we really stand for. And the last thing I want to just add on to that is kind of for the listeners or attendees or anyone really, is like, don't forget that it's really easy to become numb or bitter when you're like dealing on the internet, especially, but in general, customer service, whatever. But most of the time, there is somebody on the other side of receiving what you're putting out there. And that is a person who needs to process what you're saying, who needs to make a decision about what you're saying, and who might be internalizing what you're saying, even if it's not directed at them. And I think if we all just had a little, just a little more, I don't even want to say kindness, just thought it through, just 1 second longer before we made that comment or before we sent that email, to think about the person who's going to have to receive that, that can be your one little way of making things just a little bit better. You can still complain. That's fine. That's totally fine. But just remember that there's somebody who, for the most part, is going to have to be taking that in.
Thank you so much for coming to Coffee and Conversations this morning. Really wonderful, wonderful comments on stage. Thanks again to Jenny Owen Youngs, Natalie Dean, Amy Reitnauer Jacobs, my work wife, Elizabeth No,
and to my work wife, Cynthia Howes.
Wonderful. Basic Folk is on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can find us wherever you get podcasts or BGS's website, basicfolk.com. My mind just went blank. We did it.
You nailed it.
Everybody,
thank you
it
for
up
coming.
For ourselves.
Thanks, everybody.
We did it. And thank you to Six Man for having us.
Thank you, Six
Have
Man.
A wonderful,
thank you for being
thanks,
here.
Thanks, Natalie.
Have a wonderful rest of your cruise.
This episode of Basic Folk was produced by Anthony Cabrera. Our music composed by Alex Stanton. Basic Folk is on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can find all of our episodes there. You can check us out on Folk Alley's mobile app and folkalley.com. You can search for Basic Folk on the SiriusXM app. You can go to our website, basicfolk.com, or find us wherever you get podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, maybe send it to a friend, like your friend who is in the debate club in high school and won every single award that there possibly could be for debates and now gets whatever they want whenever they want. Send it to them, actually, and I would appreciate some feedback as to whether or not we actually are debating or if we're just sort of like presenting thoughts and opinions and agreeing with each other and how we could improve. If you could send it to that friend and earmark it with some suggestions, would be fantastic. Thanks very much. All right, we'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening all the way to the end. Love ya. Bye.